care of it, made the calls, ate a little pasta. When she got home just after 6, he had the outdoor table set, with flowers he hoped he was allowed to cut, and wine ready to pour. "Well, look at this." Darby surveyed the table while Zod raced over to Zane as if they'd been parted for years.
"I figured we both deserved it."
Her gaze shifted to his. "Don't we just?"
"I made crudité."
"You did not." He shot a finger at her.
"Did. I figured it would start off our three-course meal."
"Okay, what are the other courses?"
"Pizza and ringdings. The crudité are a sop to adulthood."
"I think I'm in love." He took a firm hold of her face, kissed her.
"Better be."
She laid her head on his shoulder, sighed. "Let me go up, get a shower, change so I can be worthy of this amazing meal."
"I set things up in the guest room, the front-facing one with the window seat."
She tipped back her head to look at him, then as her eyes blurred, just lowered her brow to his shoulder.
"I figured we deserved that, too," he added.
Because she didn't trust her voice, she tried to nod, then just tightened her grip. "Hang on a second," she managed. He did, just hung on in the quiet evening with the odd little dog sniffing their shoes. "You've got a way, Zane. Such a good way. I told myself to suck it up. The boarded doors, the bullet holes. It's not the room, it was the man. It's a good room."
"It'll be a good room again. But for now, we've got others."
Steadier, she drew back, smiled at him. "Now I've got you all sweaty and probably transferred some stone dust. You ought to come join me in the shower."
"You have the best ideas. Just let me feed the dog."
He ate on the job. Taking Zane's hand, she started inside. "Later, he can have a you-know-what while I sample your crudité." In the shower, Darby sloughed off the sweat and grime of the work. With the mating of wet, slippery bodies, she sloughed off the stress that had curled tight in her all day. She felt it release, slide away like the water down the drain. Even knowing it would come back, perhaps because she knew, she could steep herself with him, with what they gave each other. Under the pulse of water, skin slick with soap, hands greedy and gliding, they pushed away the ugliness, embraced the joy. They kept the door closed on painful reality, sent Zod into spasms of delight with a milk bone. And lighting candles, pouring wine, they talked of anything but what had shattered the peace in the dark hours. With the light softening, the dog snoozing under the table, Zane poured more wine.
"Ready?"
Darby took another sip, nodded. "Yeah. You?"
"Yeah."
"Okay. Start by telling me how Tracy handled it."
"I'm glad her mother was there. Even gladder I took her sister. She needed both of them to help her through the it has to be my fault stage."
"She's been beaten down, physically, emotionally, so that's knee-jerk. There were women in my support group who automatically assumed blame for everything. My kid failed his spelling test. Must be my fault. Terrible mother. It rained yesterday when it wasn't supposed to, so I must have done something wrong."
"I saw that plenty with abuse victims back in Raleigh."
"Which is why having you there helped her, too."
"Hope so. In any case, she's going to stay in Asheville for a while longer. She's scared of the Drapers, and she's not wrong."
"Do you think they'd try to retaliate? Against her?" No point, he thought, trying to soften it up.
"Payback's a religion to some people. Darby, you need to know at least right now, they're twisting this whole thing around so somehow I set it all up. Killed Clint."
"That doesn't make any sense on the planet."
"Doesn't have to. I think Horace Draper's beginning to see that, but it doesn't mean they won't try to strike back. And you're part of that. Not just because you were here, because you're with me, but because Clint targeted your place."
"I've already figured that out. Maybe he had some problem with me before. He might have been the one who broke into my place." Frowning, Zane studied his wine.
"It doesn't seem like his style. Not the break-in, but the fact nothing really valuable was taken. Nothing was wrecked. Still, you could connect his whacking off on your doorstep with taking your underwear. He was already pissed at me, Zane considered, because I wouldn't take him on as a client. So, maybe.
He reached over for her hand.
Either way, you need to be careful.
We both do.
We both do. Meanwhile, Lee's already matched his prints to your place, my office, the truck, the paint cans, and so on. The idiot Clint was staying with gave Lee a good timeline, up until said idiot passed out. His truck, his paint supplies. They'll have cause of death, ballistics, a tox screen pretty quickly. The DNA will take a little longer, but Clint's was already on file.
She'd thought of all that during the good physical work of the day. But none of that's going to point to who killed him.
No, it's not.
Reading his face, she tapped a finger on his hand. You have theories, Mr. Prosecutor.
Maybe.
Now she circled her hand in the air. Please proceed.
All right, then. Clint wasn't what you call a popular guy, not outside his family and a few idiots like Stu Hubbell. He pissed off a lot of people. He'd get drunk, start fights, or get grabby with somebody's wife, girlfriend, sister. He hounded people like the McConnells. He poached on posted land. There's a guy who lives farther up in the hills who claimed last year that Clint and his brother Jed poisoned his hunting dogs.
Well, God. In response, Darby rubbed a foot over the snoozing Zod.
Couldn't prove it, but Lee let me read Clint's file. He was adamant. So a lot of people didn't think of Clint kindly, you could say.
And your theory is one of them saw him sneaking up here, followed him, took the opportunity to pay him back.
That's one of them.
You have another that worries you more.
Yeah. Graham Bigelow.
He's locked up. Alarmed, Darby spoke quickly. Lee checked. Emily said,
Graham's locked up, Zane confirmed. But that doesn't mean he couldn't be a part of this. He's spent nearly 2 decades in prison. He knows how the culture works inside. There's a chance he could have made a deal with another con who was up for release, or knows somebody on the outside. Somebody who'd come here, watch the routine, look for an opening. Maybe break into your place and know not to leave prints, not to disturb too much.
That idea, even as a theory, sent a shiver down her spine. But why kill Clint?
Stretch the theory. He's right there. Take him out, cause trouble, upheaval. It took smarts, if we go with straight bad guy, not to take the weapon, not to leave prints again, not to break in and go after us. Smart would know cops would come pretty quick. Smart bides its time, looks for the next opening. If something happened to either of us now, who would Lee have to look at first?
The Drapers.
You got it. And while he is, whoever did it walks away. I put more into the first theory, but we can't discount the second.
The second's closer to one of Brody's. Surprised, Zane paused in pouring the last of the wine.
Brody has a theory?
A couple, and both slide close to both of yours. Mean doesn't always need a reason, just an opportunity.
Ain't that the goddamn truth?
She looked toward the western hills, the lowering sun that showered them. I love this place. I know I haven't lived here long, but I love it. The look, the feel, the people. I know there's mean under it, because there's some mean under anywhere. But the mean's why the Drapers are the next thing to outcasts here. She looked back at Zane, lifted her glass. We're going to be all right, Walker. We'll paint over the mean. We know it's under there, but we don't let it win. To prove it, I'm painting my place Tangerine Dream. Zane opened his mouth, closed it, cleared his throat.
Wouldn't that be orange?
It would. And the door in trim? Tango in teal. Bold, happy, up yours, mean, type colors. What are you painting, your office building?
I bought white. A lot of white.
Come on, she made a dismissive gesture, flicking white away. You can do better.
It's a law office, darling.
She leaned closer. Is the law boring?
I'm not painting it Tangerine Dream.
I was thinking more nautical navy, mystic gray for the trim and porch. I'll show you on my paint fan.
I bought white.
I bet they'll take it back, exchange it, because
white.
Take the opportunity Mean gave you, Walker. Make a statement.
I'll show you, she said again. After we take this wine and walk the dog.
White's classy and classic, he insisted as they got up, and Zod jumped to his feet as if an alarm had sounded.
Yawn.
The painters are starting tomorrow.
And I bet they'd agree with me if they have any taste.
She took his hand in hers. He had a feeling she was leading him to more than dog walking. Later, when she showed him her paint fan as threatened, he saw himself exchanging the damn paint in the morning. While they walked the dog, the man who'd come to Lakeview and done murder took himself for a walk as well. As he strolled by Zane's office building, he made a point to stop, to gape.
Terrible thing, isn't it?
As he'd hoped, one of the local yokels stopped to chat.
Just awful.
He put shock in his voice.
You visiting?
I am, yes.
My family lives in Lakeview. I can tell you this isn't usual.
I should hope not.
Promise.
She smiled at him, a pretty young thing. Maybe he'd make a point to have a taste or two of pretty young thing. Maybe he'd kill her after. So many possibilities.
And actually, I work there. Law offices. I'm an intern. Gretchen Filbert,
she told him, friendly as a puppy.
Drake Bingley. Nice to meet you.
But he looked back at the smears of paint, calculated how soon the sun would go all the way down, how long it might take to lure pretty young thing.
Aren't you worried?
I guess I would be, but the man who did it?
He watched her censor herself.
He won't be back. It's a nice town, Mr. Bingley. I hope you have a wonderful visit.
Oh, I already am. Say, I wonder if you can tell me the best place to have a good steak, a good glass of wine. I'm in the mood.
Oh, sure.
She beamed at him into quiet blue eyes behind scholarly wire-framed glasses. He knew he looked like a professor, one taking a few summer weeks to work on his novel. He'd spent considerable time cultivating that look, letting his hair grow, adding the professorial, to his mind, goatee. He wore faded jeans, Birkenstocks, and an ancient Grateful Dead t-shirt he'd picked up at a flea market. He even had the man purse, holding a well-worn paperback copy of The Grapes of Wrath, as if, along with his wallet and false ID, a bandana, and the 9mm Glock he'd stolen from his brother-in-law's collection.
You can't go wrong with Grandy's Grill. Just down a couple blocks and across the street.
Sounds good. Say,
he began again, only to be cut off when another pretty young thing ran toward them.
Gretch, sorry, running late. Luca just texted. He and John are already at Ricardo's. Grabbed a booth. Sorry.
Like Gretchen, she gave him an easy smile.
Am I interrupting? No, just letting Mr. Bingley know where Grandy's is. One day I've got to get Lucas to take me there for more than a beer and nachos. We got a book. Enjoy your steak,
pretty young thing one called back to him as she rushed off with PYT2. Opportunity missed, he thought. For now. Maybe next time. He continued his stroll, decided he'd go ahead and have that steak. Maybe he'd strike up another conversation, find another pretty young thing. Even not too young would do. Chapter 27. Though he wasn't 100% convinced, Zane exchanged the paint. He worked through the morning while the paint crew covered Clint's nasty art with primer. He had to go through the story, an abbreviated version, with every client, except their outrage on his behalf before getting to the business at hand. He glanced up from his notes when Maureen came in.
Your friendly reminder, you have to leave for your appointment with Mildred Fissel.
And her cats. I'm gearing up for it, and today's change in her will.
Her granddaughter in Charlotte sent her flowers for her birthday, so she's back in. You've got 2 hours clear. Take a long lunch after.
I might do that.
Call Micah or Dave. See if they can meet up with you for lunch.
He angled his head.
Worried about me?
I love you, Zane. Almost as much as I love my new shoes I got in the Independence Day sale. You know Horace Draper made bail.
He's not going to come into the Sunshine Diner gunning for me, Maureen.
Do it anyway.
Fine. I tell you, women are running my life.
We're so good at it. And speaking of that, you should think about getting Gretchen on board for next summer. She's just right, and when she passes the bar, she'd make you a nice associate.
I thought of it myself, so don't go all smug thinking it was your idea.
She only smiled, smugly. I took Cubby and Mike out a cold drink a bit ago. Cubby showed me what they're going to paint. I figured you'd stick with white.
I should have, right?
Only if you wanted to be usual and boring, which you were going to because Millie at the hardware told me you bought white, then brought it back when they opened this morning for that nice strong blue and that pretty gray.
Know it all,
he said, and began to load his briefcase. Darby nudge you there?
Maybe.
I'm giving you credit, she waited a beat, for having the good sense to hook up with a woman of vision and taste.
I'll take it. Now get back to work. I don't pay you to chat up the boss.
Amused, she stepped to him, kissed one cheek, then the other. Call Micah or Dave, or both. You'll do that for me, won't you, honey?
Yeah, yeah.
He left by the back to avoid the painters, and texted Micah, and what the hell, Dave, as he circled around for his car. After he dealt with Mildred Thistle, her cats, her ever-evolving will, he wanted to drink his lunch, but refrained. Since both Dave and Mike were available, he imagined Maureen had told them they'd better be, he decided on a manly lunch of meatloaf under the bright lights and within the orange walls, tangerine dream, of the diner.
Meatloaf, huh?
Micah considered the laminated menu as he gulped down some fizzy lemonade.
Cassie's making noises about going vegetarian. Ain't gonna happen. Make it two. To be young and able to eat the meatloaf special midday. Screw it. Make it three, Bonnie.
Will do. Yours is on the house today, Zane. Show of support.
You don't have to. Done.
She tapped a sharp finger on his shoulder and left to put the order in.
Some bennies from a wad of crap,
Micah said.
And it saves me from paying for your lunch as my show. Hey,
Micah waved a hand.
I'm still here. Just to finish up the wad of crap before we eat. Word is the other Draper boys are coming back for the, you know, funeral. The one's getting a day pass under guard, then it's back in the slammer. The Marines got bereavement leave or whatever.
Great.
And Stu Hubble showed up at the clinic last night with a busted up face and a broken arm. Said he fell down the steps, but that's bogus, man. You know Jed Draper gave him a beatdown.
Dave shook his head, looked unsurprised.
Blaming Stu Hubble's ignorant, illogical, and typical of the Drapers. We can hope Jed Draper got it out of his system.
But you don't think so,
Zane said to Dave.
That kind always blames someone else. He's going to end up behind bars sooner or later. I can hope for sooner. They gotta know it wasn't you, bro.
Yeah, they have to know.
But they had to know it hadn't been Stu Hubble either, Zane thought. Then again, Jed Draper would find it a lot harder to give him a beatdown than he had Stu Hubble. He didn't like knowing a part of him looked forward to the attempt. At the first patter of rain and grumble of thunder, Darby and her crew grabbed up tools and headed for their trucks. Patsy Marsh popped out of her back door and gestured.
Y'all come on up here, have a seat on the veranda. You're going to have a glass of tea and some of my pound cake.
You don't have to trouble, Darby began, then switched gears.
Did you say pound cake? My mama's secret recipe. All y'all sit, take a load off. This rain isn't supposed to last.
It's a fine place to watch a storm rolling,
Ralph said.
Sure do appreciate it.
Saves my Bill from eating more cake than he should.
Can I give you a hand, Ms. Marsh?
Hallie scraped off her shoes on the mat.
You sure can. And how's your mama, your grandmama?
Patsy asked as they went inside. Darby dropped down on the glider because Ralph had it right. It was a fine place to watch a storm. It whipped the trees, stirred up the water of the lake that went bright with the first slash of lightning. And with it, the air blissfully cooled. As Ralph took a padded chair,
Darby patted the space beside her for Roy. Doing okay?
Yeah.
Still, he let out a long breath with his eyes on the lake.
Can't help but think about it. I sure wish they'd catch who did it.
Tell you what I think.
Ralph hunched forward in his chair.
I think Clint got one of his asshole friends, might be his own brother, to go on up and cause trouble at Zane's place. Drunk and stupid, argued about something. One asshole picks up a rock, smacks the other. Doesn't mean to kill him, but that deed's done, so he does the rest to cover. And what else? Whoever did it was likely stupid enough to think the cops would figure Clint fell in and drowned.
Darby said nothing for a moment. She calculated Ralph had used more words in a single minute than he normally did in a full week.
That's what Adele thinks, Roy put in, like it was more accident than deliberate. Drunk and stupid.
Because although she didn't agree, the idea seemed to comfort Roy. Darby said nothing.
So, you know. Anyway.
Roy let out another long breath and the patter of rain turned into buckets, beating the roof of the veranda like war drums.
I'm engaged.
You...
Darby punched his arm.
When?
Asked her last night.
And you wait all damn day to tell us?
Still getting used to it myself.
But it drew a quick head duck grin out of him.
I didn't want to ask till I had a ring. What I see is women can be pretty particular about there being a ring, and I didn't have time to get one. Then yesterday, after everything, I thought how life's pretty damn unpredictable, and I had to make a move. So I went out and bought a ring. She seems to like it just fine, so I guess I did okay. I asked her, and she said yes.
What's this I hear?
Patsy, carrying a fat pitcher full of amber liquid, stepped out with Hallie right behind her with a tray.
Roy Dawson, am I hearing you finally had the good sense to ask that nice girl to marry you?
Yes, ma'am, I did.
Isn't that fine news?
She set down the pitcher, began to pour tea into the glasses on Hallie's tray.
I bet your mama's just tickled.
She sure is.
You set a date?
Well, Adele wants spring, when it's warm enough to do it outdoors. She and my mama and her mama are already diving into it, so I'm just going along. I might miss a few days,
he said to Darby,
with the wedding and a honeymoon.
You don't worry about that one bit.
First slice to the groom,
Patsy declared, and passed Roy a dessert plate with a generous wedge of pound cake.
This is fine and happy news, just what we need.
A little teary-eyed, she passed out cake.
These young ones, Ralph, they don't know yet how fast it all goes, how you have to grab onto all the pieces, good and bad, to make the pictures you want to leave behind.
Gotta take the storm with the sunshine, my old mama used to say.
Isn't that the truth? I like a good storm,
she said quietly.
It washes away the heat and the hard, at least for a little while.
And, Darby thought, wouldn't part of the hard be stepping out on her really pretty veranda, looking out at the lake she loved, and remembering the body pulled out of it? As if she'd heard the thought, Patsy turned, smiled brilliantly.
What you're doing to what was an eyesore and a frustration to me down that slope is the best thing since my mama's pound cake.
And it's real good cake, ma'am.
Gabe shoveled in the last bite.
Real good.
Storm's passing, Hallie said. I'll take these dishes in for you before we go back to work.
Don't you fuss with that, honey. I believe I'm going to sit out here, enjoy the cool a bit, and watch y'all work.
Darby thought about storms and grabbing all the pieces. About the simple kindness of offering cake as she dug the next hole. The sun broke free, burned bright on the water, and turned the storm-damp air to steam. Boats came back to glide, and kids leaped into the lake from a raft, filled the world with laughter and squeals. Death didn't stop life. Not for long. It was life, she thought of, as she planted a trio of toothwort she'd chosen almost as much for its name— Southern Lady, as its foliage and flowers. It would bloom early, she thought, start showing its stuff in the winter like a hellebore, then shoot up those sweet flowers at the first whisper of spring.
Something on your mind, boss?
Hallie wondered. Just thinking it's late in the season now, but what a show this will make next year.
It's pretty now, too.
Yeah, it is. And we're going to be done here today. But next spring and the summer that follows and right into the fall, my oh my, what a job we'll have done.
She stepped back to check her positioning and, pleased, pulled out her phone to take a couple of shots. Walking down to the river rock Ralph and Roy had spread, she took some from a different angle before glancing out to imagine how it looked from the water. She saw a little sunfish sliding by, a lone man guiding it. Long, sun-baked hair spilled out of his fisherman's hat. The sun boomeranged off his mirrored sunglasses. When he raised a hand in a kind of saluting wave, she felt a quick chill slice through the damp heat. But she lifted a hand in return before turning away.
Well, gang?
Odd. Her throat felt tight. She unhooked her water bottle, soothed it.
We're about down to cleanup. Let's knock her out.
She caught herself glancing back, but the little sunfish had sailed on. Laughter had the man going as Bingley nearly capsized.
Looked right at him and waved. If he'd had his Glock, he could have shot her where she stood, and all the rest of them with her.
Maybe a couple of those idiot teenagers as well, screaming as they jumped off that stupid raft just to cap it off. Maybe shooting her in the head wasn't his plan, but he just loved knowing he could have.
Time's coming, bitch, he thought, with the great good humor of the moment. Time's coming for you and the asshole lawyer.
And anybody who got in the way. If he'd learned anything since going in, coming out of prison, it was he had a strong appetite for blood. The spilling of it.
July moved on with its heat and quick, hard storms. Tourists flocked to Lakeview for their lakeside and hiking holidays. The summer people streamed in and out with murder barely making a ripple on their souvenir shopping. Primer covered the ugly on Zane's building, so people streamed by it as well, and the bold new color began to make its statement. While he waited for the other shoe to drop, knowing it would, Zane went on with his life. It didn't surprise him to see Lee driving up on a lazy Saturday morning while he sat on his front veranda researching SUVs on his tablet. He set the tablet aside as Lee got out of the car.
Morning, Chief. Zane.
His glance rose up to the boarded doors.
No doors yet?
Coming in next week, and my trusty painters are going to finish up at the office, fix the damn bullet holes in the bedroom here. Want something cold?
Lee looked at Zane's tall glass.
Is that iced coffee?
It is. Come on in, I'll get you one.
I won't say no. Darby around?
She had a couple consults this morning. She should be back before too long if you want to talk to her.
Girl keeps busy,
Lee commented as Zane led the way inside.
She does. Maybe why she sleeps like the dead. So, are you on duty, Chief?
Summertime's usually all hands on deck. This one especially.
Yeah.
Zane got another tall glass, filled it with ice.
How's that going?
What we got is a victim nobody but his family and a few reprobates liked. Drunk, pumped up with pills, out on a vendetta who ends up with his skull caved in on your property before he's dumped, already dead, into the lake.
After picking up the pitcher of room temperature coffee he'd already brewed, Zane glanced over.
Do I need a lawyer? It'd make my job easier if you did.
Zane poured coffee over ice, added milk from the fridge, handed it over.
If I'd gone out there, I might have seen something. Someone. And gotten yourself shot. There is that aspect. How about we go porch sitting? I won't say no to that either. You do make damn good coffee, Zane, hot or cold.
The law thing doesn't work out, I could try a career as a barista.
They went back out, sat. Zane picked up the baseball he'd brought out with him, rubbed the seams.
I hear the Drapers are having Clint's funeral tomorrow. Dexter's funeral home. None of the Drapers are churchgoers, so that simplifies that. And they're burying him in their family plot.
That's still legal under some basic guidelines in this state.
It is, and in this case simplifies things again. I've talked to everybody I know had a hard-on for Clint or the Drapers in general.
You get overtime for that?
Lee let out a huffing laugh, drank some coffee.
I can tell you it took a hell of a lot longer than talking to those who ran with him. but in both cases, it's not fallen in line. Turns out that Clint had some hard words with Richie Fields a couple weeks back, and Fields is the type who could bash a skull in. Thought maybe I had a line there, but at the time in question, he was a guest of the county facilities after getting pulled over outside of Hickory for speeding, reckless driving, and DUI, which he added to by taking a couple swings at the county mountie.
Well, you don't get a more solid alibi than that.
You don't,
Lee agreed, and drank more coffee, looked out at the hills.
With your work in Raleigh, you'd have gotten some threats.
Goes with the job, Lee, just like it goes with yours.
It does. I need you to start thinking if you got any credible, any that would have brought somebody here looking to cause you trouble.
I have been thinking about it.
Zane studied the ball, ran his thumb over the seams.
There might be a few.
I want those names, son.
Yeah.
Zane turned the ball around and around in his hand.
I've been thinking about taking a trip to Raleigh, having a conversation with Graham. We're on the same page there, too. I've already had one with the warden. Graham's had a few cellmates in his time, connected with others. Some are back out in the world. We need to tug that line, too. The truth, Lee, while it doesn't feel like something he'd think of, he likes to be the one causing the pain. If it is his doing, I'm more worried about Darby. He'd never get over being put down by a woman.
How about I make the arrangements and we go talk to him together?
I'm good with that. You let me know and I'll work my schedule around it.
I'll let you know.
Meanwhile, are you really going to represent that idiot Cal Muldoon for popping Larry Easterday after he and Easterday got into that fender bender?
What can I say, Chief? Everybody's entitled to a defense.
Lawyers.
Lee let out a sigh.
This is damn good coffee.
More where that came from.
Lee shook his head, set down his empty glass.
I gotta get on. You know,
he added as he stood,
your building in town's looking pretty good. The mayor gave me some chatter about how maybe we should encourage other property owners along Maine to think color.
Always look for the upside.
Lee's eyebrows disappeared under the brim of his cap.
Darby.
Zane grinned, shrugged.
I'm trying to latch on. Good luck with that. I'll be in touch.
Love to Emily.
Always.
Zane sat, rubbed the baseball. He'd send Lee the names from those credible threats, the data on them, but those weren't so worrying in his opinion. He had more concern about the ones he'd helped put away who hadn't made threats, who'd been smart enough, careful enough not to make them while they bided their time inside imagining payback. If Lee felt he'd eliminated anyone local, it was time to take a harder look back, time to dig through some case files. He went inside, switched tablet for laptop. He had enough data on it to get started on what would be a long process. He hoped Darby would be another hour or so, and not just because she'd promised, threatened, to give him a garden maintenance lesson on her return. He wanted to make some progress, eliminate or list possibilities before she got back. He didn't want to cloud their weekend with undercurrents, he decided. About 20 minutes in, he heard someone coming up the road, automatically saved his work, closed the file. And as cover, brought back up one of the car dealerships he'd scanned before. But it wasn't a truck. Wasn't Darby. Instinct had him taking a fielder's grip on the ball as the beige compact stopped beside his convertible. He didn't recognize the man who got out, not at first, but saw tall, well-built, neatly dressed in khakis and a polo shirt, close-cropped brown hair, square jaw, probably late 30s. Then the visitor removed aviator sunglasses, started forward. Military, Zane thought from the posture, the stride.
Zane Bigelow. Sorry,
he corrected.
Walker. That's right.
Putting it together, Zane got to his feet.
It's Beau Draper, isn't it? Sergeant Major Draper now.
It is.
I'm sorry to come to your home uninvited, but I hope to have a word with you.
Come on up. Want some iced coffee?
That's very kind of you, but I'm fine. This is quite a place. New since I've been around Lakeview.
About 8 years old. You've been gone a while.
just over 20 years now. I enlisted at 18. I haven't been back since, but it's hard to lose a brother, even one you can't claim to know. I guess he was 8 or 9 when I left. Have a seat, Sergeant Major. I'm fine, he repeated. I won't keep you long.
He glanced at the baseball Zane still held.
I watched a few of your games well back in the day. Do you still play?
Not really.
Zane set the ball down.
That's a shame. Mr. Walker, Zane. Zane, I've heard what my family has to say. I've heard what the police chief has to say. I'm not able to talk to Clint's widow as she's away. I'm leaving right after the funeral, but before I do, I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Your brother's widow is a client. I can only tell you that she's in a safe place. It was necessary for her to seek a safe place, as by her account, which is credible, your brother physically assaulted her. Not just on the night of July 3rd, but routinely. She came to me for help. I got her help. She'd be Allie Abbott's younger sister. I knew Allie a little when I lived here.
That's right. My family claims Clint never laid a hand on her. Then I hear them say he never laid a hand on her that she didn't deserve.
Beau's jaw tightened.
I'm a married man and I have 2 daughters. I wouldn't take kindly to anyone who laid a violent hand on them. I'm not my brothers. I'm not my parents.
I'm not my parents either.
Beau nodded.
I heard some about that. My family's saying you and Clint's widow were having an affair.
I met Tracy 2 times since I got back to Lakeview. Once when Clint brought her with him to my office, hoping to file a frivolous and frankly vindictive suit against his neighbors.
The McConnells?
That's right. He wasn't pleased when I refused to take his case. I met her again when I went to their place because I saw the signs of abuse. She wouldn't talk to me, but I left my card. I'm involved with someone. Seriously involved. Tracy's my client, nothing more.
The woman you're involved with, Darby McCray. She'd be the one who was here that night?
That's right.
Clint defaced her property as well as your office. And the windows upstairs.
Doors, he corrected. The ones that are boarded up.
He shot them out.
Evidence would indicate he did all of that. I don't know who killed your brother, Sergeant Major, whether it was friend or foe. A deliberate act or an accidental one. I do know it happened on my land, right over there. While the woman I love woke to have bullets from Clint's rifle hitting the wall 3 feet above her head.
He was the runt of the litter, my pappy used to say, and he'd give the kid a smack just for the hell of it. That's not excusing what he did, and I believe he did all you're saying, but he was raised up mean.
You were raised in the same house.
I got out,
Beau said simply.
The Marines didn't just make me, Zane. They saved me. You were raised hard, and it seems to me you made different choices than my 3 brothers.
My family saved me. My sister, my aunt, the man she married, my grandparents.
I remember your grandparents,
Beau continued.
They're good people. I can't say my family's good people, but I'm going to stand with them while we bury my baby brother. And I'm going to stand here now, look you in the eye, and apologize for what my brother did.
Not necessary.
It is for me. Maybe if I'd stayed longer, I could have helped him see a different way of being. But I saved myself, and I can't regret it. I've got 1 brother in prison, another who's so like the old man you can barely tell them apart. Now I've got 1 going in the ground before he hits 30.
I'm sorry. I wasn't going to say it because I didn't feel it. But I can say it now. I'm sorry, Beau.
I thank you for that. I'd like to pay for the damage my brother did to your home, your office, Ms. McCray's property.
Absolutely not.
If you won't take that, I want to ask you to let me pay for any of Tracy's legal expenses.
They're pro bono.
Beau sighed, squeezed the bridge of his nose.
You don't owe me or my family a single damn thing, but I'm asking all the same. There has to be some restitution. I want justice for Clint. I want to believe whoever killed him will be caught, tried, and punished. But there has to be restitution for what Clint did for me to settle myself on it all.
If you give me your contact information in a few days, I'll give you the name of a women's shelter. You could make a donation.
Beau closed his eyes briefly, nodded.
I can promise to do that.
He took out his wallet and drew a card from it.
You can contact me when it's convenient. I'm going to do my duty to my family, then I'm leaving. Going back to my wife, my daughters, my life. I won't be back again.
He held out a hand and they shook.
I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
I'm going to say the same, and thank you for your service, Sergeant Major Draper.
Beau started back to his car, paused, looked back.
You couldn't have been more than 13, 14 when I lit out.
That'd be about right.
You sure could play baseball.
Zane watched him head down the road, then sat, picked up the ball again. Maybe the Marines had made Beau Draper, and saved him. But to Zane's mind, they couldn't have done either if he hadn't chosen to let them.
Not just what you're born into. Who raises you, he said aloud as he rubbed the ball. It's what you do about it.
He set the ball down, picked up the laptop again, and got back to doing what he could do to protect what mattered to him. Chapter 28. Emily pulled up in front of the bungalow with her youngest in tow just after 9 a.m. Together, she and Brody hauled out the fresh sheets and towels, the soaps, shampoo, lotions, and the bags of groceries the guest had ordered. Far from a morning person, Brody grumbled and scowled as they carted the supplies.
When I take over the business, I won't be cleaning cabins.
Emily just let out a snorting laugh.
Yeah? Let me know how that works out for you, pal.
Since she heard the television through the open windows, noted the privacy sign absent from the front door, she shifted her load, knocked. She had a smile ready when the door opened.
Good morning, Mr. Bingley. Is this a good time for housekeeping?
He beamed a smile back.
It's always a good time if I'm not doing it. I was expecting Janie.
Janie's mama tripped, broke her ankle this morning, so we're covering for her.
I'm sorry to hear that. How's it going, big guy?
Brody barely resisted the sneer, dragged out his polite voice.
Just fine, sir.
He walked the groceries straight back to the kitchen.
Do you want to check, sir? Make sure your order's correct?
I'm sure it's fine.
Brody, you go on and put the groceries away. Make sure to pin the receipt to the board there.
The polite tone dropped away like a stone in a well.
I know, Mom.
Like he hadn't done it a zillion times before.
Good, then you can start loading up the trash. I'll start in the bedroom, Mr. Bingley, if I won't be in your way.
The handy thing about writing? You can do it anywhere. I'll just take my laptop out on the porch and get out of your way. I'll see if the view inspires me to get my quota done this morning.
She wasn't bad looking for an old broad, he thought, as he unplugged his laptop from the charger. Definitely had a fine ass, but tits probably sagged seeing as she had two kids. Plus, she was married to the local cop, so best to keep hands off that one. Her brat didn't look happy with his assignment. Couldn't blame him. Groceries, housekeeping, women's work.
I bet you'd rather be off with your friends than cleaning houses, huh?
Brody shrugged.
That's how it goes with a family business.
He put the quart of milk, the bottle of mango juice in the fridge, glanced at the paperback on the kitchen table. His mood perked up some because book.
I know that one won the Pulitzer and all, but I liked Cannery Row better.
What?
That one's a total bummer if you ask me. Mom likes East of Eden best, and it's pretty good, but I still like Cannery Row.
He just gave the boy a blank stare.
Good for you.
Brody gave Bingley a long look.
My cousin got me into Virgil Flowers, and he's way cool. I'm going to do Sanford's whole series this summer.
I don't watch much TV,
Bingley said as he took his laptop out to the front porch and ended any sort of conversation. Thinking it over, Brody put away the rest of the groceries he figured Bingley was too lazy to go by himself at the market. Knowing his job and his mother, he loaded the breakfast dishes Bingley had been too lazy to put in the dishwasher. Then, following routine, he dumped the kitchen trash into the big plastic bag before he noticed Bingley hadn't separated the recyclables into the second can. With a strongly disapproving look aimed toward the front door, Brody did that job before carting the bag to the bedroom. His mother had already stripped the bed, loaded the sheets and bathroom towels into the laundry bag. Brody started to speak, thought about open windows, and saved his comments. He put the fresh sheets on the bed, something he'd rather do any day than clean somebody else's bathroom.
Just gross, man.
He knew he wasn't supposed to, but he eased the night table drawer open just a little.
Condoms. Then the one on the other side of the bed. Nothing. He did his job, emptying the other trash baskets, dusting off the furniture, putting the glass and plate beside the bed into the dishwasher. He did both bedroom floors, though it didn't look like the guy had stepped foot in the second bedroom, left the second bath for his mother to wipe down, and did the dusting, polishing in the living area. In a rhythm, he went out to sweep the back patio, check the water in the pots while his mom dealt with the kitchen. In under an hour, they hauled out the dirty linens, trash, recyclables, and Brody noted instead of writing anything, Bingley had Candy Crush going before he toggled quickly to his screensaver.
All done. Enjoy your day.
You do the same, Bingley told Emily. It sure is a peaceful spot. Oh, I meant to say the grounds are really beautiful. You must have a bright green thumb.
I wish I did. You can credit Darby McCrae and her crew from High Country Landscaping. We left you another marketing list. It's on the board with your receipt from today. You just let us know if you need anything.
I'll do that. If I get my quota in, I may try some kayaking this evening.
If you do, don't forget your coupon for the rental. It's in your welcome folder. Happy riding.
Brody waited until they were in the truck, until his mother started the engine.
Riding my butt? Brody Michael Keller. I'm serious, Mom. He was playing Candy Crush on his laptop. Well, God, Brody, so he was taking a break, or distracting himself while we were cleaning.
But Brody dug in.
If he's a writer, how come he thinks Virgil Flowers is a TV series?
Not everybody reads popular fiction, even writers.
Brody just shook his head as Emily drove to the next bungalow on their list.
No way, Mom. Just no. He's supposed to be an English teacher, right? Like in college. But when I said something about Cannery Row and East of Eden, he had the grapes of wrath on the table. He didn't know what I was talking about.
Of course he did.
Uh-uh.
When Emily pulled up at the next bungalow, Brody swiveled in his seat, his face set, even mutinous.
He didn't. And if he's an English teacher and a writer, how come he's only got one book in the whole cabin?
He probably uses a reader. He's probably got a Kindle.
I didn't see one. And he looked at your butt when you walked away to start the bedroom.
Oh my God.
We better call your dad and have him arrested. I didn't like how he looked at it,
Brody mumbled, unamused.
I didn't like him.
Brody, we don't have to like every guest. We just have to give them good service. And that's what we're going to do for the Campbells right now. 4 people, including 2 kids under 10 in this one. So expect more work.
He had more to say, but since his mother didn't get it, like at all, maybe his dad would. He cleaned 3 bungalows with his mother. The Campbells was definitely the worst. Then rode his bike into town. He went by the station house, then hesitated. His dad would listen, he knew that. And most likely his dad would tell his mom. Then he'd get a lecture. Maybe not his dad then, at least not yet. But it ought to be family, and somebody who understood about bad guys and liars. Family. An adult.
A lawyer.
And one who'd put bad guys away. He turned his bike around, rode to Zane's office. The building looked good, he thought. He hadn't seen the stuff Clint Draper had put on it in person, but one of his friends had taken a picture and he'd seen that. He figured Clint Draper was one of the bad guys his dad and Silas and Zane dealt with. But now he was dead, so they didn't have to. He left his bike out front, walked right in. Mrs. Carter looked up from her computer. He bet she wasn't playing lame old Candy Crush.
Well, hey, Brody.
Hey, Mrs. Carter.
You got legal trouble?
He smiled because she'd expect it.
I don't think so, but maybe I could talk to Zane about some stuff.
You're in luck. He's got a half hour before his next appointment. You go right on back.
Gretchen, who he thought was really pretty, though he wouldn't look at her butt the way that Bingley lowlife had looked at his mom's, came in from the back with a thick file.
Hi, Brody.
Hi. I'm going back to see Zane.
Great. How about you tell him I made those copies like he wanted?
Okay.
He kept going, pausing at the door to Zane's office, where Zane sat at his desk, sort of frowning at his computer screen. Wouldn't be a game up there either, Brody thought. He rapped his knuckles on the door jamb.
Hey, Zane?
Hey, Brody.
No hesitation, Brody noted, when Zane swiveled away from the screen. Some adults pretended to pay attention, but they were still thinking about their other stuff. His parents even did it sometimes, unless you made them see it was important.
I want to talk to you about something.
Sure, have a seat. Something you need?
No, I don't know. Not exactly. Mom's not listening. So, Janie's mom broke her ankle.
I heard. Or Maureen heard, so I heard.
I'm sorry and all, but I had to help Mom clean some of the bungalows so Janie could help her mom. I don't mind so much, but when I'm running things, I figure on having more standbys for housekeeping. Anyway, we cleaned the one that guy who's supposed to be a college English teacher who's writing a book's in.
Supposed to be?
Yeah.
Zane listened.
Yeah, supposed to. If you had the Grapes of Wrath sitting on the table and I said how I liked Cannery Row better, what would you say?
I'd have to say, even though the Grapes of Wrath is considered his masterpiece, I agree on that. Though I'm really fond of Tortilla Flat.
I haven't read that, but see? You'd, you know, say something about the books. You wouldn't just go like blank. And if you were really an English teacher, you ought to have a bunch of shit to say.
I'm going to agree with you again, but it could be he didn't want to talk. He may have been surprised a teenager could have opinions on Steinbeck. Not everybody's friendly.
But he was trying to be, right? How's it going, big guy?
Brody rolled his eyes.
I hate that. I'm not big, so it's like patronizing.
Okay.
The kid liked puzzles, Zane thought. And since it intrigued him that Brody thought he'd found one, Zane leaned back, swiveled side to side.
Clearly he hit you wrong big time. What else?
Okay, first, before the book thing, he looked at Mom's butt.
I gotta play devil's advocate here, pal. I've been known to look at a female butt in my time. I expect I'll do so again.
Not like that.
It made him uncomfortable still, had heat rising up the back of his neck.
It wasn't nice. It was like, it made me think I was glad I was there, that Mom wasn't alone with him.
The initial humor on Zane's face faded away.
All right. If you got a bad feeling from him on that, we'll make sure your mom doesn't go there alone.
The embarrassed heat washed away in relief.
You believe me?
I believe you got a bad feeling, and that's enough.
Okay, good. A couple other things. So I got this wondering when he acted like he never heard of Cannery Row like that. I said how my cousin, you, got me going on Virgil Flowers, how I was going to finish Sanford's whole series this summer.
That fucking Flowers, great stuff.
Yeah, it is. And he says to that, he doesn't watch much TV, even though the stupid TV's on right then anyway.
Huh. Well, I pity his lack of taste in fiction, but...
He's got no book, Zane.
Rolling with it, Brody tossed his hands up.
No books except for that one paperback. I looked when we were cleaning, not one book. And don't say e-reader because he doesn't have one, I looked. You can't tell Mom or Dad, not any of this, but I looked in the drawers.
I'll consider this attorney-client privilege, but you know better, Brody.
Because he did, and maybe he'd deserve the lecture, later, he rushed on.
He wasn't writing anything, either. He was playing Candy Crush on his laptop. I think he's lying about being an English teacher and lying about writing a book. How come he'd lie about that?
We can't say for certain he is, but people lie for all kinds of reasons. How long's he here?
I don't know. I couldn't check because Mom went back to the office. He's got a real expensive bottle of scotch in the cupboard, the kind Pop gave Dad last Christmas. I saw that when I was putting his grocery order away. And his hiking boots hardly have any wear on them. He didn't recycle and the bin's right there. How come somebody driving a Prius doesn't recycle? He's lying, Zane,
Brody insisted.
People who are hiding out lie. Criminals lie. Criminals hiding out especially lie, right? Maybe he's the one killed Clint Draper and tossed him in the lake.
Whoa, let's slow down. You're making some solid salient points here. Don't overstate your case. What's his name?
Bingley? I don't know his first name, damn it. If Mom leaves the office, I can get into the office computer and find stuff out.
Jesus, Zane thought. The kid was a pistol already firing.
Hold off on that now. There's no point in you getting into trouble over this.
Considering, Zane picked up his baseball, turned it in his hand.
You came to me, and I'm going to respect that.
I'm going to respect you've got reasons for feeling what you feel. So I'll do a little poking around. If everything about him checks out, no harm, no foul. If it doesn't, I'll take it to your dad.
Promise?
Zane swiped a finger over his heart.
It might take me a couple days, but I'll look into it. You do me a favor back and stay away from that cabin.
Okay.
Promise?
The hesitation told Zane the okay had been cover, but the promise would stick. Brody swiped a finger over his heart in turn. To make it official, Zane took out a legal pad.
All right, let's get down what you know. Bingley, college professor, you know where?
Up north, but the Prius is a rental. He's maybe like your age, I guess. Not as tall as you. Maybe around 6 feet and like 150 maybe. He's got blonde hair, sort of long. One of those little beard type things, blue eyes, and he wears glasses.
The kid paid attention, Zane thought as he noted it down. He tossed out a few basic questions, dug out what he could.
I can work with this.
Satisfied, Zane pushed up.
Let's grab a cold one before my next client comes in.
He walked to Brody, held out his hand, knowing the shake would seal the deal on both sides. Once he sent the boy off, Zane sat back down at his desk, made more careful notes from their conversation. He knew Brody was a smart kid, and not just academically, and also a naturally friendly one. Something about Bingley had set him off. And while he hardly saw some guy renting a bungalow on Reflection Lake bashing in Clint Draper's skull, he'd follow through on his promise. So he needed a full name, where he supposedly taught, maybe the address on record. A simple matter, if he could ask Emily or talk to Lee. But he'd made the promise, had to keep it. He put the mission aside for his next client and couldn't get back to it until the end of the workday. But he had a plan. He strolled out as Maureen and Gretchen shut down for the day.
I should be in by 11 tomorrow, he said, as if both of them wouldn't know. I don't expect I'll be more than an hour in court.
Regardless, your first appointment's at 1:30.
Maureen pulled her purse out of her bottom drawer.
You should grab lunch first.
How about if I bring lunch back and we have ourselves a picnic on the back patio?
I'm in. Not pizza.
You're a hard woman, Maureen. Say, I bet I know something you don't.
She gave him a smug, sidelong look.
Prepare to lose.
We've got a budding Hemingway penning his literary classic in one of the Walker bungalows.
Maureen flicked her fingers in the air.
As if that's news to me. College professor from up north, spending a chunk of his summer here for the quiet and inspiration. About your age, I expect. Single, since he's here alone and doesn't wear a ring.
Oh, I met him.
Gretchen shut down her computer, pulled out her own purse.
Mr. Bingley, or I guess it's Professor Bingley.
John Bingley?
Gretchen paused, brow furrowed as she thought.
No, it was Blake, Drake, Deke, something like that. Not John. Why?
Not somebody I know, then, Zane said easily. How'd you meet him?
Oh, it was just in passing on the street a few days ago, really. He was looking at the building, like everybody was before we had it painted again. I said something, he said something. He wanted to know where he could find a good steak and wine. I told him Grandy's.
Good choice.
He locked up behind them, considered going down to Grandy's and poking there, but decided to start with the Blake, Drake, or Deke. He texted Darby as he walked to his car.
Salt mines are closed. Heading home.
Me too. I'm right now in line to order pulled pork sands, coleslaw, sweet potato fries. We will feast.
I'll have a cold beer waiting for you.
20 minutes.
Good deal, he thought. Damn good deal. He drove toward home, top down, looking forward to sharing Brody's story with Darby, as Brody hadn't included her in the no-tell. Plus, he wanted her take on it. Because what was it with a guy driving a Prius who doesn't use a clearly marked recycle bin? Or an English prof who wouldn't enjoy talking Steinbeck with a teenage boy? A puzzle, he thought. A mystery. And one he realized he wanted to get his teeth into. Takes me back, he realized, to working with investigators, to, yeah, puzzling out how to nail down the bad guys. He turned up his road, wound around a curve. hit the brakes hard. The truck sat crosswise, blocking his way. Jed Draper already stood beside it. And Zane sincerely hoped he wasn't about to be shot down a quarter of a damn mile from his own home. He didn't see a gun as he got out, but it didn't mean Jed didn't have one handy. Still, he had Jed by a couple of inches in height, and while Jed had that tough Draper look about him, Zane figured he could handle himself if Jed stuck with fists.
"You're blocking the road, Jed."
"My brother's in the ground."
"I know it. I didn't put him there."
Jed stepped closer, fists bunched, wiry body at the ready.
"My ma thinks you did."
"I'm sorry your mother lost her son. I don't think there's anything harder than that. I didn't kill him."
"If you did, they'd cover for you. The whole fucking town would cover for you over a Draper."
He spat in disgust.
"So we're gonna settle it right here."
"What's this going to change? You punch me, I punch you. Clint's still going to be dead. I still won't have killed him."
"He wouldn't be dead if you hadn't took his wife from him. Whether you threw him in the lake or not, he'd be alive if not for you."
The hell with it, Zane thought. They weren't walking away from this without spilled blood and pain.
"He'd be alive if he hadn't come on my land and shot out my doors. Got what you deserve there. Lesson you deserve for putting your nose in our family business. Think you're better than him? Better than me?"
Zane redistributed his weight because it was coming.
"Yeah, I know I am."
He blocked the first swing by pivoting into it, letting it bounce off his shoulder. Then, shifting his weight again, sent a roundhouse into Jed's solar plexus. It knocked Jed back, but didn't stop him. Zane felt the pain of bare knuckles glancing off his chin, used it to fuel his own blows. The fist he connected to Jed's face slit his lip. Jed bared bloody teeth, charged like a bull. Mistake, Zane thought, and simply danced away while his left pumped an uppercut on Jed's jaw.
"There's no point in this," Zane began,
holding off as Jed shook his head clear. And that was his mistake, not following through. As Jed steamed at him, he remembered Dave's words to a young boy who needed to learn to fight. Outside the ring, there's no fair in fight. Tasting his own blood, Zane waded in.